Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, I'm proud to bring you the Urantia book with Nick Curto. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Oh, never better, Hercules. Great to be here with you and my guests. This is a very beautiful day here in Manhattan. It was a time to get out, do a little shopping, and it started. It's only like a month away, so we gotta start looking for the right kind of presents for the people we love. And you could see the people were really eagerly shopping. All the stores were really quite buzzing. And today, my partner and I went to the Guggenheim Museum to see the art exhibit there. Have you ever been to the Guggenheim?
Not in very many years. I lived in New York for over 40 years. And during that time, I visited museums fairly often. But I haven't been in maybe 20 years.
Well, I just want to mention to our listeners that when you go to New York City you're looking for things to do, do not miss the Guggenheim Museum. It's such an amazing structure. Frank Lloyd Wright, I think, is one of his best. And the inside of that museum, of course, is spiral. So you're on a slant from top to bottom, and you're seeing artwork as you go up or down these ramps, this huge ramp that goes all the way up to the ceiling and then all the way down to the bottom. And it's quite an experience. It really is. It's very unique. And it's one of my favorite buildings in New York, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I miss New York, but I've been out in the country for so long. Last time I was in New York, I believe, to speak at the Disclosure Network a while ago before the pandemic, I was overwhelmed by the amount of people. There were more people in that one block than I'd seen in Pennsylvania for like a decade, maybe.
I understand. It really is. Even where I live in Yorkville, East 86th and Lexington and 3rd Avenue, it's like Times Square. There's so many people. It's such a buzz, really. And we just got a brand new Target has moved in on my block.
Wow.
And that's a gigantic store. And that's walkable within like a minute of where I live. So that was quite a plus.
Well, I'm looking forward to your show tonight, as always, and I'll be here if you need me.
Oh, thank you very much, Hercules. A pleasure. And again, this is Nick Curto with the Urantia book. And this is, again, such an amazing episode for my life to be part of the Urantia book community. I first heard of the Urantia book after I had attended every Sunday morning the All Souls Unitarian Church located in Manhattan's Upper East Side. That was going on for 2 years when the minister that last Sunday morning read for my last reading for this service, I'm going to read from the Urantia book. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I've never ever heard of such a name of a book, and I couldn't understand what the word Urantia meant. And he read a few paragraphs, and literally it stopped me absolutely in my tracks. What he was reading was so cutting edge, so loving, and so amazing that I thought this could be the book that I always hoped I would find, or the knowledge that I would hope to find in my life. This could very well be it, and it was quite an amazing moment for me. It just resonated to me so much. And after he read and just said to the people, go now, the service is over, I went all the way home thinking, Urantia, Urantia, trying to remember that funny name at the time so I could write it down and look it up. Well, long story short, I did pursue that, and I ended up at a study group, the Urantia study group, with two wonderful, wonderful people who are now my dear friends, Robin and Helene Jorgensen, and for many years I was studying with them every Tuesday night when we'd read the Urantia book out loud and then discuss it, and it was a truly amazing experience. It was expansive. The Urantia book is breathtaking. It explores your eye-opening. It explores your all the questions that you really have that you want to have answered and looking for that, and there it is. The Urantia book is called The Fifth Epochal Revelation. The text with the word Urantia means our planet Earth. So the Urantia book is really the Earth book, meant for us now. And wow, what a powerhouse this book is. I cannot recommend it enough. It unites religion, science, philosophy, history in one amazing, amazing book. And it claims to be presented by celestial beings. And after reading that for many years, I think that people who read their book absolutely know that that is true. This is coming from an amazing place. And for them to share this advanced information and knowledge is such a discovery. It talks about the meaning of life, mankind's place in the universe, the relationship between God and all people, and not only on this planet, but in the universe. It goes that far. The fourth part of the book is probably my favorite because it's the entire life of Jesus from the very beginning to the end and then way, way beyond that. And it's I was a student of the Bible for many years, and this somehow opens up those chapters much deeper and shows you much, much more. And anybody who explores the Urantia book, I think, will come to the same conclusion. Now, it's a very large book. It's 2,098 pages. I also am a longtime reader and member of the Urantia Society of Greater New York. That's made up of Urantia book readers from New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. I highly recommend if a person is interested in the Urantia book, going to one of those meetings, which happen fairly often, every few months. Now, I'm going to give you my email address if you want to contact me and you have any questions, either for me or comments, or for my featured guest for this evening. So right now I'm going to give you my email address so you have that, and that is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, not O-N-E, but the numeral 1, @gmail.com. Again, nicknyny1, @gmail.com. Now, the Urantia book has been translated an amazing 28 world languages, which is an amazing feat, with many more on the way, which is extraordinary. It's also sold in better bookstores worldwide. And also on the internet, you can either read it or listen to it. Now, that's amazing that they've got that going. You can listen to it or read it, the whole book for free on the internet. And there's two websites I want to give you for that. They're both extraordinarily good, beautifully designed, and will give you a lot of information. So I'm going to give you those also right now so you have it. The first website is urantiabook.org. So that's urantiabook.org. The other one is www.urantia.nyc. Highly recommend both of those websites. There's tremendous amounts of information there. Okay. Now we have the my pleasure, of introducing our guest for this evening. I'm so happy that Sue Sickenby could join us. She is the president of the fellowship. And Sue, I want to give you a very, very warm welcome tonight. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Nick. Great to be here.
And you were on the program before, and we did talk about your early life and your family and all the things that were going on as you grew up, which was wonderful. And I want to ask my producer, Hercules, if the audience tonight wants to access that first program with Sue, what are the best ways for them to do that so they can hear the first program?
They can Google it. That's actually the easiest way. Or they can go to Blog Talk Radio's website and look through the directory of past shows. and look at all the shows that are Urantia book, and from there you'll see who is in each episode. So those are the two easiest ways.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Hercules, for that. And I hope that those people who haven't heard that first program will do that, because it's excellent and there's a lot of background material there about Sue and her life. It's really a wonderful way to access that and to catch up. So, Sue, how long now, because you're fairly new, how long have you been the president of the Urantia Fellowship?
Well, it's going by fast, but I think it's been about a year and a half, almost a year and a half. So I'm at about the midpoint of my 3-year term.
Incredible, incredible. And I just want to briefly mention that you are second generation. And if you will, just give us a brief about your dad and the early part of his access to the book.
My dad's early access to the book was in the late 60s, and he had been at work, and somebody was talking about UFOs and aliens and extraterrestrials, and he perked up and said he was interested in that conversation, and somebody told him, oh, well, you'll be interested in this book, and they pointed him to a corner where the Urantia book was sitting on the floor among some other trash. And he dug it out and he picked it up and he thought, well, you know, maybe it's free since it's just sitting here. So, he started reading it and, like you said earlier, was just kind of blown away at first. He thought, skeptically at first. I remember him telling me the story. He said, who are these charlatans speaking to me with such authority? And then he read some more and he said, wow, these charlatans are pretty beautiful beings. So he kept reading. And like you said, the more he read, the more he was just overwhelmed with the clarity and the depth and the detail and how it answered so many questions he had had his whole life. And so he was really, you know, just a really strong early believer and convert that this was the real deal. And so I was just a small child when that happened. So I grew up with all of this. But he became the president of the Urantia Brotherhood from 1973 to 1976. And that's what moved our family to Chicago. And back then, and it still is, an all-volunteer organization. We have one and a half paid people, but our entire board is volunteer, and he was a volunteer, and we've just had thousands of volunteers since then. You know, I stand on the shoulders of spiritual giants, you know, who've really carved a path and made way for us to be able to, you know, take the Urantia book into the digital space and a different kind of stage.
That's wonderful. And it's one thing leads to the next, as you know, and one inkling of what is this book? And then you're starting to read it. And mm-hmm. in my personal life, I thought, oh my God, look what they're exploring. They're exploring subjects. I have never seen anything like this. And the depth and the data that was there. I mean, you have to be blown away. The data is incredible, and you start checking it and it's spot on, and mm-hmm. one thing leads to the next, and I said the Urantia book is a little bit like potato chips because once you start reading, and this has happened to a lot of people that I've talked to, you cannot put it down. You really can't.
And
I remember spending
You remember?
Yes, please go ahead.
I know I was going to say, with my best intentions to go cover to cover many times, I find myself just skipping around because I'll read something and say, oh, you know, that I read something about that here, and there's so many cross references. It was only through a study group, you know, that I really finally had the discipline to go cover to cover. It took about 6 years, but when I was reading on my own, I kept wandering around in the book, and I thought, I wonder if I've read this whole book. So, yeah, it's. I think it's important to go cover to cover at least once, because it's a different experience. But yeah, there's so much in there to wander into.
You know, that too is what happened to me too, is that when I got the book and I skipped around, I went to the table of contents and I went, holy, whoa, look at that, look at this. And so I started reading Spot, and every bit of it I was reading just encouraged me to keep going. And then, okay, time to go from the beginning to the end. You know, you take that challenge, and wow, it's such a powerhouse. And it's very impressive. And I got to say also, Sue, there was this feeling throughout the book of total love and total caring, right? Mm-hmm. Did you feel that?
I felt that, and I felt, I'm trying to think of the right words. I felt a sense of security in the universe that I had never experienced before. You know, when I started reading it really, well, the cover to cover reading, I first was struck with how organized and efficient and orderly and planned and well run the universe is. And I was so shocked by that, because our world sometimes seems like such a mess. But when you take that really, really big picture view, it gave me a great sense of security to know that not only was God in charge, but he had everything well in hand. You know, there was so many different beings with different assignments and tasks and jobs and responsibilities, and who did those things so well that I really didn't have to worry. I just had to worry about my own person. I didn't have to worry about the calamitous things that might happen, you know, in the universe or even in the world. And so I really, you know, I got the personal feeling of love, that I was loved as an individual. But I got this great sense of security that we as a globe, as a people, even though we're, you know, backwards and we've maybe made more mistakes than any other planet, we're still loved. We keep getting chance after chance after chance, and rescue mission. They haven't given up on us, and they're not going to. The truth of the Urantia book and where we're headed and why will not fail. So
absolutely
I got
true.
A sense of love, but I got that sense of security too. It just really helped me. I feel like it helped me spiritually relax.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that in these times, right now, right today, and yeah, into the new year, there's a lot of challenges, more challenges that we're facing now than ever before. And that's a whole other program, but the challenges are huge, and mm-hmm. you can really be quite dizzy from all the challenges that we are facing on every single level there is. I think that my parents in the late 30s and 40s, when the World War was going on and all those challenges and what they're going to do, I feel as though this is the time now, as heavy as the challenges that my parents faced then. It really feels mm-hmm. like that. And the Urantia book gives you the big picture, like you were saying. It gives you the big picture of everything. And mm-hmm. you feel as though there is organization, that there is good and there is evil, and how to deal with that, and how to structure mm-hmm. that, and who has mm-hmm. your back. And the answer is you have amazing connections. And another mm-hmm. part of that book that I love, maybe you could comment on that, is the section that talks about a different planet, a different world, and their government and their civilization. I was blown away with that. I had to read it two or three times. Mm-hmm. Did you feel the same way?
I've read it a number of times, and ironically, there's a group of Urantia Book students that are doing a project right now, well, probably a number of people, on paper 72, Government on a Neighboring Planet. And it's not the entire planet that has been enlightened, but there's a portion, an isolated portion of this planet that has really done some different things. And it's almost like an instruction manual. If we wanted to really change the world and really uplift ourselves intellectually and spiritually and morally and challenge ourselves, you know, we might want to think about some of these things. But I read that because this project these current readers are doing right now on paper 72 is it's so fresh in my mind. We recently had a meeting about this, like how could we communicate some of these ideas, these concepts for contemplation to the world without, I just can't even imagine the reaction of our planet today, like the whole section on voting. You have to be educated enough to vote, and the more highly educated people get more votes. Could you imagine that?
Absolutely.
Today? So we've actually been working with this group trying to figure out how to communicate the ideas in that paper without necessarily, giving them, here's the list, but putting it in some kind of context that might be useful. So there's so many people that are trying to share at least the truths that are in the Urantia book. You know, you read things like Government on a Neighboring Planet and the light bulb goes on. You think, wow, if that was only possible here, or if we lived on a planet like that, or if we had these kinds of disciplines or standards for ourselves, what an amazingly different world it would be. And then you think, how do you share these truths? You know, you read it, I read it. We immediately saw the potential and the possibility. But trying to figure out how to share that without people freaking out, I guess, is the challenge.
Well, yeah. Well, it is. It is a big challenge, but it has to be addressed because there's right now nothing more important than the education of what is really going on, what elected officials are working in the people's interest, and what elected mm-hmm. officials are doing exactly the opposite. And as we all know, as the data comes in, there's a lot of shocks and surprises along the way. One of the things that section of the Urantia book said, and this popped
out. Can you hear me?
Oh, boy, this popped out at me, was that if anybody in an elected office betrays the public trust, it's the highest crime punishable by death. And I thought, wow, what a concept. Can you imagine the governments of our planet right now, and I'm talking about all those governments, every one of them, including our own, had that mm-hmm. mandate that if they were to betray the public trust of the people who voted them in, that would be it. They would end. And I thought the whole world would be transformed within a split second.
I thought you were going to
really
say
popped out.
We wouldn't have any politicians anymore.
We'd well,
have to elect a whole new
you slate. Wouldn't have. Well, you wouldn't have any of the corrupt politicians, the one who take the money and then do what they're instructed to do as like puppets, which a lot of them are. And it's sad, but this is not just America. Obviously, this goes all over the world. And
right,
the people of the world don't deserve that. They don't deserve that. They deserve the best.
Yeah.
And we need politicians that are going to look out for us in our interests and do the right thing and not be moved by billions or millions of dollars if they vote the other way with vested interests. So anyhow, but that part of the Urantia book really, it was almost like they were tapping us on the shoulder on that and that part of the book and saying, people of this planet Earth, take a look at this. See what you think. And I think incredible.
Yeah, and that planet is not that far away from us. They said it's relatively
exactly,
nearby.
Right. Right. That's another part of that, too. That, and, of course, the government is slowly beginning to give us the data on what the reality of of their research and their discoveries are. They've been masking that since the 30s, as far as we know, maybe earlier. And now they're slowly trickling down, and we've seen the reports that they're beginning to say, well, actually, we have been studying this very sensitive area from the 30s and 40s, and we do have a lot of data, and they're slowly giving it to us.
And everything that's going to be coming back from the James Webb Space Telescope, I mean, better pictures, farther away, seen through better lenses and hopefully wider minds. I mean, already, I think some of the data coming back from the new James Webb is causing scientists to say, this is going to require that we rethink everything. And I thought, well, that's a good first idea. That's good. So, when I was reading the paper on government on a neighboring planet, I thought to myself, we live in a time where it's almost like it's so permissive. We're afraid to say no to anything. Everybody wants to say yes to everything and everyone, even things that are maybe don't strike us as right or righteous or correct or appropriate. But we're afraid of hurting somebody's feelings or getting canceled or leaving somebody out. And when I read Paper 72, the government on a neighboring planet, I was struck by how often they had to use, they had to say no. You know, they limit the size of cities. You know, they can't be more than 1 million people. They require homesteads to have a certain number of acreage so that people can farm and, you know, grow their own food and just not be living on top of each other. You know, some of the values that I think have been lost in parts of our world. So, we tend to say yes a lot, but that paper also says sometimes it's wise to say no.
Yeah, I agree, totally agree with that. And again, it points to a life of living a realistic life of understanding food and clean water and family and working together as a unit. And again, those chapters are amazing. Now, so I want to also ask you, since you're in such a pivotal world of the fellowship, the plans that have been going on now and the plans for 2023 for the fellowship. I think that there's a few things now that they're looking at starting or continuing. And I'm just wondering if you could give us a little bit of a sample of what the thinking is that the fellowship is doing right now.
Sure. Let's see. where do I begin?
I get that. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Well, I think there's some big things, and like you said, there's some continuing things and some steady programs. That maybe one of the bigger things in 2023 will be the international conference, which will be at the end of July. So there's a lot of time and volunteer hours and effort that goes into that. But they're planning on I think it's a 4-day conference with a number of maybe six keynote speakers and maybe 60 workshops on every kind of topic you can imagine. So the thing that's great about the conference is that the people who will give workshops and talks, it's a chance to meet such a diverse kind of people, but also your brain has the experience of just thinking about and pondering such a diverse range of opinions and topics. And, it's a really great time for friendship building and seeing people we may not have seen for a few years, but also learning and kind of helping integrate, at least for me, these experiences at conferences help integrate what I read and know from the Urantia book into my life. So I'm feeling like I can live it or live it more, you know, in a way that I'm understanding it or more clearly or more consistently. You know, it's just encouraging to be with other people who understand, you know, these are our goals, our shared goals. And, you know, even if I can be distracted by all of the things happening in the world, sometimes being with another group of people who've read the Urantia book and have that big picture, it's just a great focus for me. So I love our conferences, and I love how many people have raised their hands so far to give workshops and speak and have volunteered to do a lot of different things. We're planning a pretty significant kids program, kids and teens. And so I think over the years, it's been a concern of some people that we've sort of missed a whole generation. You know, we had this kind of huge influx of people in the 60s and 70s and maybe 80s. And then a lot of their children didn't necessarily become the next generation of us. We have this little gap. So we're trying to backfill, and we have some second generation and some third generation and some grandchildren. And we're starting to really get some interest from young people, like 20-somethings. And I think it's because of just the digital explosion, especially in the pandemic, you know, with everybody getting on their computers and looking for meaning and purpose and wondering what in the world is happening and if the world is coming to an end. And we had thousands and thousands of people, you know, come to the website and look at the Urantia book. It doesn't mean they've all started reading it, but of those thousands, you know, probably hundreds did. We've certainly had a lot of interest coming that way. And so we're starting to hear from 20-somethings who are really getting discouraged with traditional religion and how it just hasn't been what they were hoping for. So I'm hoping that we're going to see a whole cachet of young people at this conference too. And it's going to be in Chicago. So that's right outside of Chicago. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. We have a really robust grant program called the Second Miler Grant Program. And it has been through the generous contributions of our donors and people who've given matching gifts and who have specified, you know, that they wanted their donations to go to this type of thing, that we've been able to support a lot of different projects. And these are global projects. I mean, it's not just in North America or this area, but, you know, everywhere from the Philippines, Africa, South America is just exploding with new readers and interest. And they've got Urantia TV and Radio Urantia in Spanish. And they're programming 24 hours a day in Spanish. And every time I turn around, we have another area coordinator or field worker who's raised their hand to, you know, take books and host or go to book fairs or host study groups or just try to address all of the new interest we're seeing in South America. And we've had so much interest from the Spanish-speaking world that we have some Spanish content on our main website, but we're actually building a Spanish website so that we can address so much of the interest coming from the Spanish-speaking world. Our website is going through a big update. You know, over the years, when we started having a website, we've had different web directors and different people with talents who've been able to kind of keep us up so fast. We get to a point where we kind of have to unfurl some of what has been put together over the years and design it for the speed and technology that's used on today's website. So we're trying to make changes. They're not really visible yet. We're getting the back room cleaned up first. But that'll hopefully make our website easier to use and faster to use, and it'll organize some of the literally millions of resources on that website. There's actually a search engine on our website that will let you not only search our website, but search every Urantia website. So if you have a question about something, you can go to our website, urantiabook.org, and you can type in to the search bar that says UB links, which means it links you to every Urantia website. And if it's not on our website and it's somewhere else, you'll be able to find it through that search engine. So Barry Clark, who's in your society, and I think in your study group, he's been a huge mentor and a huge asset, helping us, you know, make sure that our technology is up to date and robust, and that we understand, how to get higher in the search engines so people who are looking for us can find us. And we have, thanks to him and the web team, we have a grant from Google that gives us the equivalent of $400,000 a year in Google ad grants, which is basically, it's not monopoly money. It's like you can use this much credit basically to run ads on Google. So if, you know, those ads that you'll get on, in your margin or at the top of your page, and they're usually related to something that you searched for. So when people search for, we can decide what the topics are, but say, for example, somebody searching for angels, you know, they may get one of our ads pop up. What does the Urantia book say about angels? And so we can go through and look at all the things that people are Googling and searching for, and we can create Google ads that correspond to those ideas in the Urantia book. So that's a really generous grant, and we've been able to not only use it to help direct people to the content they're looking for in the Urantia book, but we've also been able to share it with our societies. And we've just started learning how to regionally target our Google ads. So, for example, if you wanted to do an event in New York City on UFOs, we would be able to look at all the Google searches within 100 miles of your zip code and see how many people are searching for UFOs. And maybe we don't see UFOs come up a lot, but we see aliens come up. So we might use that word to kind of call out people who are looking to find out, is there life on other planets? And so we would be able to use some of those Google credits to maybe support your event and just run ads around your vicinity for people who might want to attend that event if they're interested in life on other planets or talking about that with your Urantia book readers. So we're really just learning how to use that tool more effectively and more intelligently, and we're grateful to Google and to the people who've helped us use that grant. And I feel like we're just scratching the surface. So that's been pretty exciting, learning just how much potential there is in that. I'm hoping that we're going to be working on more Unity projects. I'm really a big proponent of Unity with the other Urantia organizations, especially with the UAI, the Urantia Association International, because we have such a similar mission. We basically do the same kinds of things. And, we're the social groups or the membership groups or service. I feel like if we all were wearing the same jersey, you know, the same color jersey, it would be easier for the rest of the world to see that, oh, you know what, this is a bigger group than I thought. You know, there's actually a lot of people reading this Urantia book. It's not as obscure as it used to be or as I thought it was. So I would love to see us unite under the banner of Michael. You know, we're not, I hear people say, well, we should have spiritual unity, but not spiritual uniformity. And I don't think for a minute that's about, the unity is about spiritual uniformity. I mean, if you look at the fellowship, we have such an enormously diverse group of people, not just volunteering, but the people that we support with projects and funding and education. There's no uniformity at all, but somehow it's just the most inclusive organization you can imagine, where we find a place for everybody and a way to respect and include everybody. And, we stay focused on our mission, which is, you know, to share the Urantia book, to learn what we can about it, to integrate it into our own lives, to become personally transformed so that we can be the, you know, part of what transforms the world. So I would love to see greater unity. I know we've done some projects that we've worked together on, like the study group directory is a great example of all of the organizations pitching in and having kind of a, I wouldn't say neutral, but there's people from each organization on the study group directory so that it's, you know, very, very even-handed. I really don't like the, I don't like competition. I don't think we should be competing with each other. The world is huge. The needs of the world are huge. Our spiritual needs are huge. And as ministers, there's so much we could do to share what we have. I mean, we've just been given a gift. And I don't like the idea of somebody having to choose, you know, which organization they might want to work with or join or become a member of or even ask the question. It shouldn't even be a question. They should just see the banner of Michael and be like, oh, yeah, I know who those people are, and I want to be part of that group. So I'm hoping there'll be more unity projects. I'm pushing for that. I don't know what they might be, but I do meet regularly with Mo Siegel, who's the president of the Urantia Foundation, and with Enrique Traver, who's the president of the Urantia Association. And we were meeting quarterly for a while, and then we decided to start meeting monthly because there is so much going on and there's so much that we can do to coordinate, whether it's, you know, on the web or in person or with specific projects. So one thing that we're specifically trying to get off the ground is a calendar that would integrate all of the activities from regardless of who's sponsoring them or where it is, whether it's a webinar or, you know, a Urantathon or a conference or a campout, that everything would be on the same calendar. So that's a technological trick right now. It's not as easy as it sounds, but at least that's the vision, that there would be one unified calendar of events. So we've got a Parliament of World Religions coming up in Chicago, 2 weeks after our international conference. So there's a group of people who are going to be attending that from our interfaith group, our interfaith committee. And they are right now planning some service projects to do between when the conference ends at the end of July and the Parliament starts in the middle of August. So if anybody has plans to be in Chicago late in the summer, there will be something going on and lots of people to meet, lots of ways to serve and and talk with people and ask questions. You don't have to be an expert to show up and just absorb and be a sponge. So that'll be fun. We've tried to get the conference to be closer together to the Parliament, but there was a reason we couldn't move our conference into August. I think they were going to charge us a lot more money for the conference because it starts going into their prime time of when they can rent out rooms. But I guess the end of July is kind of a dead zone. So they gave us our package for pretty cheap, even though it's still not cheap. It's cheap by their standards. So they wouldn't let us move it closer. But hopefully this group will find a way to organize themselves and find the right kinds of service work to do in those 2 weeks. What are we doing? We are going to be issuing our first ever, or at least first in a long, long, long time, annual report in the spring. You know, we've had a lot of interest from donors, and we think that it's the responsible thing to do to just make sure that our donors understand how we use their money. And that a vast majority of it, I want to say 99% of it, goes right into the programs that we support, the not-for-profit mission work. And we just got our, I think it's the gold star, and is it GuideStar? We got a gold rating. So we've started, you know, filling out the appropriate profiles in places like GuideStar, and the next one we're going to do is Charity Navigator. Because we have a really good story to tell as far as how much of donor money actually goes straight back into the mission. And so we just haven't been telling that story very well or very loudly. So we're hoping to get, you know, a good, like a 4-star rating on Charity Navigator. And if we fill out a few more forms, we can probably bump our gold rating on GuideStar up to a platinum. But you've just got to show, you know, your strategic plan and things like that, and make sure that, you know, you're a legitimate business and that they can vet us appropriately. So that's been good news. You know, we have Giving Tuesday coming up this Tuesday of next week, which is a big donor-focused holiday, I guess, for a lot of not-for-profit organizations, and they want people to kind of think back over Black Friday and Cyber Monday and pause for a minute about if there's anything that they'd like to share or give back as they consider their good fortune and maybe their own personal mission, you know, the kinds of things they might want to support. So I think having a regular annual report will just make it easier for donors to see and compare us to other organizations and places they could give money that they wanted to donate toward this type of mission, you know, the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, a transformed world, you know, people having real spiritual knowledge, real comfort in a faith that they can count on. Let's see, what else are we doing? We have some internal things happening. We're rewriting our constitution. We're trying to become a more nimble organization and more agile. So I'd like to say we're halfway through that process, but maybe we're not that far. But it's been a good internal debate about kind of questioning everything, not assuming anything, even the purpose of the organization. And membership, and, you know, should we even have members? Why would people want to join? So asking those kinds of questions, which are hard questions, you know, and when you put a dozen people around a table, those can be interesting conversations. So we're working through that. Our publications keep expanding. We keep having people write interesting articles or pieces or features for the community. And so we have so many different voices. Like I said, we have such diversity and at the same time inclusivity. So it's really a thrill to be able to include so many different kinds of voices and articles and projects in our publications. We're looking for people. We're looking for more volunteers. We're looking for people who've got video editing capability. We have a YouTube channel that we have so much content that's in you know, that's written but not necessarily in visuals. And a large part of the world consumes content through visuals and videos. And so we're kind of at this huge transition point where we're trying to convert a lot of the brilliant thinking and writing that's happened over the last 50 years into a form that's more consumable. So we need people who can, we really need people who can understand how to translate concepts into video and help us, you know, populate those things onto our YouTube site and into our social media. We've got some new scholarships. We had the passing about a year ago of David Kulicki, who was our education chair and really just a go-getter of an education chair. He was a real recruiter. He was a really great student of the Urantia book. He knew it so well. And his wife, Marilyn, part of his will was to leave some money to support young people who might show some interest in, you know, not just the Urantia book, but potentially becoming, you know, leaders. So he wants to be able to support, our future leaders. So we have a new scholarship on our website, the David Kulicki Youth Scholarship. And we're going to be using part of that to help people attend the conference in July. And we just put it on the website within the last couple of months, and I think the application is there if people want to apply for a scholarship. Or, you know, you might be somebody that wants to contribute to a scholarship like that. You can do that too. So there's lots of things like that going on. But we need more people for sure. We need more volunteers because it seems like there's always more to do and not enough of us. And that's another reason I really want us to kind of team up with our partners, because I feel we're duplicating effort in some places, and we could be a lot more efficient and effective if we were a little more coordinated. The Urantia book talks about it as coordinated working harmony. And it doesn't mean we have to merge necessarily, but I would like us to unify under a bigger banner and work more closely together. That's a personal dream of mine. So I'm going to do what I can while I have this privilege of having this office to keep telling people how important it is. We need to walk our talk. You know, we have a lot, we have trillions of years ahead of us and a lot of different kinds of beings that we're going to need to work with. And teamwork is a challenge all the way to paradise, you know, just because we pass through certain, you know, graduations and levels of, you know, greater wisdom doesn't mean that we don't still irritate each other. I wish I could find the place in the book, but I want to say it's almost in Havona, before we get to Havona, that we still have to, we have to still work on being less irritating to each other. It's going to be a challenge. So anybody who says, oh, we're just too different, we really don't need to all, you know, wear the same jersey, be in the same organization. I say, well, if you think we're too different here, wait till you meet the non-breathers, you know, or the one-brained or the three-brained.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, this ain't nothing. So I think we just really need to, we need to show people what it means to be transformed by the Urantia book, to have that serenity and that security and that peace and that faith that we can move forward, and not just when things are easy, but when things are difficult. You know, we can be above the fray, you know, even when we're offended or hurting or afraid. You know, that's when the tests are, you know, it's when we're not really thinking, when we're reacting. And so I think we could be a real testimony to the power of this book to transform you inside your soul if we would keep demonstrating what we're able to do. And one of those things is forgiveness. You know, there may be some hurt feelings between people from years ago, you know, when the organization's fractured. You know, forgiveness isn't always easy, but it's possible. So we need to keep pushing ourselves. We need to keep pushing ourselves to elevate not just how we behave, but what we choose and how we share it.
Well, Sue, you're identifying very, very important, very pivotal areas. I think that what your vision is solid. The plan is there. I think that it's workable. It's doable. I think that the staff, you, Jeff, the amazing volunteers are there with amazing talents to make this happen. And I think that this is a huge amount of good news on all these various areas that are being looked at, focused with, and going forth. And this is very exciting times right now, absolutely. And we certainly need the Urantia book. The Urantia book community, as you were saying, needs to unite even more so and go out and tell the world what this incredible work is all about and what it's telling us about ourselves, about our future, about the world, about the universe, about the plan of God, the Universal Father, and the fact that every creature in the realm is affected by that in a loving way. This message is huge. It needs to be heard, and the fellowship certainly has incredible plans in that direction. And this is, again, it's incredibly good news. And I'm very excited for every Urantia book reader.
I am too. And the bigger we grow, the more I realize how important it is to be, for people to understand. And sometimes they don't really understand this until they get to know us, that we're so diverse yet inclusive, that we can have that many different kinds of people and still get along and work together and appreciate each other, because it's not common. You usually, when you get that kind of diversity, there's usually a lot of conflict or some conflict. And people who've had a religious experience in a church, especially where they haven't felt that inclusivity, just tell us it's remarkable, you know, to spend a day or a weekend or a conference with us, that they're just amazed that everyone, just like in God's plan, there's a place for everyone. Everybody has a seat at the table, and it's pretty important. And I think some people are looking because a lack of inclusivity somewhere else in their life. But this whole, you know, I have my business profession is in marketing. And when we do a marketing campaign, you know, building awareness is always the first step. You have to just make people aware that you're.
I hate to interrupt at this point, but we have 3 minutes left.
Oh,
and
Does that go quickly or what? You know, this goes on all the time, that 1 hour, think it's a lot of time. And this has been absolutely zooming along. And what a wonderful hour to spend with you, Sue, and your visions and the plans of the fellowship and what's going on. It is really very, very exciting. And
Nick, thank you. This is a privilege, and I don't want to say anything about Jeff because I know he's going to come up as your guest, but he's a powerhouse.
Yep. That came across. That really did come across. And just much love to you, Sue, and your incredible work and vision. And please keep us close. And obviously, you're going to get an invitation in 2023 to come back on the program. And I really look forward to having you again.
It's a real privilege.
Excellent.
Thank you so much, Nick.
Oh, much love to you. And so this is the Urantia Book, Nick Curto, host, wishing you all an enlightened journey, life's journey. Till next time, please explore the deep wisdom and limitless love contained in the Urantia Book. Stay safe and be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Much love to you all out there, our listeners, and to everyone on our planet and beyond. Take good care. Good night, everybody.
Good night, and thank you, Nick, and thank you, Sue, and thank you to all our listeners, whether you called in and are patiently waiting in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Much love.